This program is sponsored by The Church of God International and supported by our viewers.
Most traditional denominations today, well, they claim and teach that the law of God has been done away with. They will announce that Jesus nailed it all to the cross, and today, yes, we no longer need to obey the law because Christ did it all for us. Nothing remains to be done. But, as intriguing as that may sound, one can't help but to wonder, well then, why would you retain and continue to teach the Old Testament law of tithing? Assuredly, if believing you'll be blessed if you sow a tithe of your earnings to God's work, why wouldn't you believe that doing other laws of God would not result in additional blessings? Well, stay with us as we investigate this question on today's edition of the Armor of God.
In times like these, we need the armor of God for the well-being of our families, to help you stand in the evil day. The Church of God International presents Armor of God, a program of biblical understanding. And now your host, Bill Watson.
Well, hello and again, welcome to another international telecast of the Armor of God. Good to be with all of you again. Many of you are familiar with this statement, money makes the world go round. That's right. Money is embedded in so many things that we deal with in our lives, and I'm sure you would agree with that. As a matter of fact, there's a very common, well-known statement that goes along the lines that if you follow the money, sooner or later, you're going to stumble across who's behind the cause or who's behind the initiative of whatever it may be that is promoting this event. Why do you think that is, my friends? Why do you think money plays such a big part in our lives? Well, very simply, it's an enormous motivator. People work for money. They sacrifice for money. They will go without sleep to make money. They even kill for money. They cheat for money. And some people will even die for money. Look at the economic landscape around you. Look at the big banks and the well-dressed lobbyists that are hovering around the halls of Washington, D.C. and all the government buildings. Even in London, England, another very strong economic hub, or New York City, all these just hoping for an opportunity to influence a piece of legislation for their particular benefit. And you know why? It's all about the money that's involved. Whether it's in the pharmaceutical or the oil industry, whether it's the real estate or construction industry, money drives and makes the decisions. It forges the movement of the globalists that cause conflict around the world, such as the Open Society Foundation, the Institute of New Economic Thinking, or even MoveOn.org. Yes, all of these many organizations are the cause of a lot of disruption around the world. Why? Because it's all about the money. And, of course, the power that's associated with the acquiring and acquisition of large sums of money. However, admittedly, money also forges progress. And so they say toward the developing of new technologies like wind and solar, these are good things, and robotics, even genetic research is all driven by private interest groups who are pouring money into these particular segments of industry for better or for worse. And on a personal scale, personal level, money has been behind an enormous amount of things. It runs the gamut in building relationships, whether it be in business or right there in your own home with your wife and your own children. And, by the same token, destroys relationships where maybe greed enters into the equation. A variety of circumstances and conditions, both good or bad, can be attributed to money. And yes, marriage is affected by either the lack and or amount of money. And you know what, my friends? God is also concerned about money. He addresses money quite frequently throughout the pages of the Bible. As a matter of fact, money is somewhat central to some of Jesus' parables. We find money and the subject of money salt and peppered throughout the book of Proverbs. And a lot of this goes back to what the Bible is trying to help us with, and that is to balance our approach toward what money is all about. But today, I want to talk a little bit specifically about money in a particular way. I want to ask this question. Is tithing required by God? Is it a law of God? Does it have any relevance to blessings from God? But before we launch into those questions, I want to interrupt myself, as we usually do, to present to you two free offers. They're both free. All you've got to do is dial that 888 number, 578-8791, and leave us your contact information. Request these two offers, a piece of literature titled New Covenant, Does It Do Away with God's Law? And a one-hour presentation by a minister of the Church of God International, Mr. George Ramakan, titled The Christian Duty of Tithing. Both are free for the asking. All you've got to do is leave us your information to 888-578-8791 or www.cgi.org and leave us that contact information, and we'll get this material out to you in a couple of weeks. Also, I wanted to mention as well a special feature. Many of you are familiar with this. It's called webcasting. All you've got to do every Saturday, we have a live presentation in real time. And this individual, whether it be a minister of the Church of God International or a visiting minister who's passing through where our home office is, will give a one-hour, roughly, presentation on some subject that is very helpful to you and your walk and relationship with God, because that's what the presentations are generally geared to help you in. So don't forget, there at that webcast on every Saturday, the times will be announced there on our homepage at www.cgi.org. And also, as I said, you can order the same offers here, which are free, by the way. Let me interrupt myself again and emphasize that. They are free. Nobody's going to be asking you for money. Everything that we offer is free of charge, because freely we've received and freely we give. So one more time, that number, 888-578-8791, and of course that website at www.cgi.org. And just leave us that information, give us a couple of weeks, and we'll get that material out to you. Okay, back to the program with what we're talking about here in respect to tithing. Now, many of you are well aware of these health and wealth ministries that are out and about in the traditional Christian community. And many of these organizations do attempt to try to encourage you in one way or shape, form, or manner to present to you an offer that if you give them your money, well then, seed your money with them, they're going to go ahead and guarantee the fact that God is going to shower you with all kinds of dollars or some kind of materialistic wealth or blessing that's going to come your way. You're going to get a nice Cadillac, perhaps. You're going to get perhaps a lottery ticket of maybe not $1 million, but maybe $10,000, or your Uncle Henry all of a sudden surprisingly died, and he's leaving you a whole large sum of money that you were unaware of. And this is guaranteed, you see, because it's kind of like, well, if you go ahead and send me your money, seed your money with me, I guarantee that God is going to give you a material blessing or additional money. It's kind of like, you know, one hand shakes the other. You scratch my back, I'll scratch yours. Kind of a, almost like a, you know, pay for play situation. And my friends, this is just so mischaracterized. It is just so unfortunately wrong in some respects. I mean, I have to ask the question, is that what really tithing is all about? This pay for play? You do this for me, and I'll do this for you? It'll all about the money, pay me a tithe. It's all about the money, that is. Pay me a tithe, and I'll shower you with blessings. I mean, come on. Do we really believe that tithing is all about that? A lot of people misunderstand tithing. A lot of people don't get what it really is all about. I don't know if I'm going to have a whole lot of time to get into all of the details with it, but I want to take some time to at least address a few points about tithing that hopefully will be somewhat educational to you and somewhat clarifying for this particular subject. And I want to launch from this first point, and that is, do you know many people think tithing came into existence when the nation of Israel came into existence? But that's not true. That's really inaccurate. As a matter of fact, there is proof in your Bible, and I want to bring your attention over here to the book of Genesis, particularly over here in the 14th chapter, where we see the patriarch Abraham, who's been notified due to a conflict occurring in the area where he was living between the kings of Sodom and Gomorrah and some others throughout the area, that has caused some of his family members, Abraham's family members, to be captured and put in a kind of captivity. And with Abraham being notified, he collects about, 300 or so of his best soldiers. I think about 318 guys. He goes and rescues his family members, comes back with all the booty, and the king of Sodom meets him and basically congratulates him for the successful campaign that he had and the successful rescue of his family members. But I want to point something out here, because this goes to the point of about 1,000 years before King David became king and the nation of Israel was really formalized in many respects. And here, over here, in chapter 14 of the book of Genesis, we read in verse 18, Melchizedek, the king of Salem, who was a priest, brought forth bread and wine. He was a priest of the Most High God. Verse 19, and he blessed Abraham, possessor of heaven and earth, and blessed be the Most High God, which had delivered your enemies into your hands. And he gave him, that is Abraham, gave this Melchizedek tithes of all. Imagine that. Abraham paying tithes right here to this priest king Melchizedek. Now, in another location over here, I won't turn there, but I'll reference it. In Genesis chapter 28, we read the story of Jacob. You know the dream he had with the ladder and so forth. He was so thankful of the result of what he saw in that dream that he made a big to-do about it and essentially built an altar and so forth and committed himself to God, claiming that if God would do, stay by him, that is, and do the things that God said he was going to do, that he, Jacob, would give him, God, a tenth of all that he had. That's right, my friends, a tenth of all that he had. So here we see that basically tithing was indeed well in existence before the nation of Israel. Now, I know the nation of Israel had a very elaborate system of tithing with animals and fruits and vegetables and different crops and so forth. I get all of that, and I understand that. But my point that I wanted to make here is, tithing goes back, predates by far many hundreds of years before the nation of Israel. And it was primarily, that is, those tithes were used to support the services of the temple and, of course, the religious worship. It was also used for the purpose of the people to attend the feast sites during the festival times of the season. Also, it was used, that is, these tithes were used to offset the costs for the poor. Now, in the New Testament, admittedly, the scriptures do not make a big deal about essentially establishing tithing as a law, because quite frankly, it was a foregone conclusion that tithing was just in action. I mean, it was a way of life. It was a part of the life of the Jews there in that area, and many of the members, the early members of the early New Testament church, let's admit it, were primarily from a Jewish Hebrew background. So tithing to them was not a foreign theological idea. So the New Testament primarily focuses on the attitude toward giving, the law of giving, toward tithing, of course, inclusive of that. And it focuses on what goes on in terms of your outlook toward this. Notice over here, and let me bring your attention to 2 Corinthians in the New Testament, 2 Corinthians, and in chapter 9 specifically, we read this very much, very clear. And I understand that the subject here is about offerings that were being collected for a special purpose. But it goes to this point of an attitude toward giving. Notice this in verse 6, chapter 9, 2 Corinthians. But this I say, he which sows sparingly shall also reap sparingly, and he which sows bountifully shall reap also bountifully. Every man, according as he purposes in his heart, so let him give, not grudgingly or of necessity, for God loves a cheerful giver. And God is able to make all grace abound toward you, that you always having all sufficiency in all things may abound in every good work. And Jesus corroborates this over in Luke chapter 6, a verse roughly about, 28 or so. I think it was 28 or maybe it's 38. It is 38, where he says, give and it'll be brought to you, shaken up and pressed down. You will receive blessings for this particular giving. Now, over here in 1 Corinthians, I want to point something out also, because, again, this goes to this point of giving and supplying the needs of those who are in need. And in this particular case, believe it or not, it's the ministry. Notice this in verse 9, and in 1 Corinthians chapter 9, and in verse 9, for it is written in the law of Moses, you shall not muzzle the mouth of the oxen that treads out the corn. Does God take care for the oxen? Well, of course he does. And verse 10 here we read, or says he altogether for our sakes? For our sakes, no doubt, this is written, that he that plows should plow in hope, and that he that threshes, in hope, should be partakers of his hope. If we, meaning the ministry, have sown unto you spiritual things, is it a great thing that we shall reap your carnal things, meaning your materialism, tithes, perhaps maybe even a place to stay? Well, of course not. It's very reasonable in that regard. He goes on here and he says, if others be partakers of this power over you, talking and opining about these transient ministers who were indeed taking advantage of some of the church members of their charity and exploiting them in some cases, he says, but suffer all things lest we should hinder the gospel of Christ. Do you not know that they which minister about the holy things live of the things of the temple, and they which wait at the altar are partakers of the altar? Even so, has the Lord ordained that they which preach the gospel should live by the gospel? A fact and a principle. He says here, but I have used none of these things. Notice what Paul is saying. He's saying, though I had a right to exercise my request for need and put it upon you to pay, I didn't do it. I held back. I refrained and restrained myself from doing that. He says, I've not used any of these things. Verse 15, neither have I written these things that it should be so done unto me, for it were better for me to die than that any man should make my glory void. He didn't want people suspecting him of being in it for the money or in it for their money. So he continues on here and he says, for though I preach the gospel, verse 16, I have nothing to glory of, for necessity is laid upon me. Yea, woe unto me if I preach not the gospel, for if I do this thing willingly, I have a reward. It goes down, dropping for the sake of time here to verse 18. What is my reward then? Verily, when I preach the gospel, I may make the gospel of Christ without charge, that I abuse not my power in the gospel. Wow. So much for health and wealth ministries. Here the Apostle Paul is saying that he's preaching the gospel for free. As a matter of fact, my friends, that's one of the reasons why here at the Church of God International and on the Armor of God, we don't charge for anything. Everything that we have, we give freely because we've received freely. We're not in it for your money. We are and would appreciate, of course, donations because all of this costs money. Of course, our studio and all of the things that go along with the expenses associated with producing a program, of course, you know that as well as I do. We're mature enough and we're adults. We know these things cost money. But far be it from me to exploit you into making you think that God is going to automatically entitling you to some kind of financial blessing if you sow your seed over here with the Church of God International. How presumptuous am I to be to say that to you when I don't know what the relationship you have with God is? I don't know the lessons that God is trying to teach you. And it may very well be He wants you to start tithing so that you can begin to exercise some faith in your life. But maybe He wants to see if you're going to start tithing and give to a work without getting something in return to make sure that your heart is indeed right and you're not giving to get, if you know what I'm saying. God is God. And God in our lives, we need to give Him the freedom to express the lessons that He has for us in our lives so that we know that we can improve in those areas that God wants us to improve in. Tithing certainly is an axiom. It's a tool. It's a leveraging device of which you as a Christian can certainly use to gain faith in your own walk with Christ. But you know, this is really curious in all due respect to many of these health and wealth ministries, because I find it just amazing how they claim that the law of God is nailed to the cross, except the law of tithing. Don't you find that amazing how they can selectively pick and choose what they want to apply in this particular regard? And obviously, being somewhat disingenuous, because if they did do away and claim that the law of tithing was along with the rest of the laws that Christ allegedly nailed to the cross, well, they would be basically spiting the hand that's feeding them, because they know their donations would, for all intents and purposes, be reduced. But the fact of it is, even Jesus Himself, and over here in Matthew chapter 23, in the course of His discussions with the Pharisees, as He was He was really spanking them in some respects. He says here in the course of that spanking, in verse 23 of chapter 23, establishes this premise. "Woe unto you, scribes and Pharisees, hypocrites," He says, "for you pay tithe mint and anise and cumin, and have omitted the weightier matters of the law, judgment, mercy, and faith. These ought you have done," the judgment, the mercy, and the faith. That's the focus. Jesus wants them to focus on that. "However," He says, "these ought you have done, and not to leave the other undone." What's that talking about? That's talking about the tithing law. Jesus is saying, yes, you still should be tithing on cumin. You still should be tithing on myrrh. You still should be tithing on all those things that you're tithing on. But do some emphatic shifting here on your attitude and become more sensitive to the things that do really matter. And that's judgment and mercy and faith and those things that are associated with true Christian character building. And again, the attitudes that go along with this law of giving that is inclusive of tithing. You know, the law was not nailed to the cross, my friends. Over here, let me turn real quickly here because time is getting short on me. But over in the book of Galatians, and in chapter 4, I think it is, we read real quickly, chapter 3, and in verse 13, we read this. Look at this. "Christ has redeemed us from the curse of the law." A lot of people will use this to justify the fact that the law has been done away with. "Christ has redeemed us from the curse of the law, being made a curse for us. For it is written, cursed is everyone that hangs on a tree, that the blessing of Abraham might come on the Gentiles through Jesus Christ, that we might receive the promise of the Spirit through faith." What's that all about? What is the curse of the law? The curse of the law is very simple, my friends. It is the death penalty. The law is very critical to the definition of sin. Look it up. 1 John chapter 3, verse 4. Transgression of the law is the equivalent of sin. And notice over here in the book of Romans, real quickly, in the book of Romans, we find, if that be the case, in chapter 4, we read, because the law, verse 15, works wrath, for where no law is, there is no transgression. Transgression of the law is sin. Where there's no law, there's no sin. Does that make sense? Of course it makes sense. The law is a very good indicator, as was pointed out over here in chapter 3 and in verse 20, where we read, for by the law is the knowledge of sin. That's right, my friends. By the law is the knowledge of sin. Over in James chapter 2, we are told that we must do certain things. James summarizes the whole thing here in verse 26 of chapter 2 by stating this: for as the body without the spirit is dead, so faith without works, or faith without behavior, is dead also. What's my point? My point is tithing is incumbent upon Christians as an expression of worship. It's an expression of exercising one's faith for the further development of the Christian character, of the Christ-like attributes and virtues of which you should be attempting to develop in your life and in the way that you do things. In Matthew chapter 5 and verse 17, we'll put the scripture up there. I'm not going to really turn there. I'm just going to reference it. But Christ emphatically states very clearly that he did not come to do away with the law. He came to fulfill the law. And then he proceeds to accelerate the application of the law by emphasizing certain aspects of how he's driving us to think about the intents of our heart. And he uses killing and hate, and he uses looking at women with lust in our hearts as actually breaking the adultery commandment. My friends, there is just so much that I could talk to you about with this, but won't you dial right now, 888-578-8791. Let us help you to better understand this relationship that we have as Christians to this law of giving, which is inclusive of tithing. Dial now, 888-578-8791. Ask the operator for both of the free offers that we're offering, a booklet titled New Covenant, Does It Do Away with God's Law? And a one-hour presentation titled The Christian Duty of Tithing. Both will be very helpful to you in understanding more details about what we're talking about in relationship to this obligation that we have to this law of giving. My friends, I look forward again on another session of the Armor of God to see you right here. In the meantime, you keep on that armor of God as we always remind you to do, and so that you may be able to stand in this evil day.
Armor of God and the free material offered is brought to you by the Church of God International of Tyler, Texas. You may write to us at 3900 Thames Street, Tyler, Texas, 75701, or call toll-free at 1-888-578-8791, or call 1-903-939-2929 during regular business hours. You may visit our website at www.cgi.org or email us at armorofgodcgi.org. We appreciate your prayers and support.
This program is sponsored by the Church of God International and supported by our viewers.